actually think I'm going to be in Nashville soon to tour Vanderbilt, so yeah.
Oh, that's great. I don't know. Has Vanderbilt... Oh, you'll be applying to Vanderbilt.
Yeah, well, I am a junior this year.
You'd be a lot of trouble for them, but maybe they want some diversity.
That's funny. Yeah, I saw that you taught there.
Yes, I was there for 18 years, and I taught at Princeton for just about 10.
Gotcha. What was that like?
I was not conservative at the time. I mean, I changed while I was there.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
It was the evolution. So at your age, you may change two or three different times before you figure out who you really are.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So what kind of changed you? Was it kind of like the research that you did, you know, in your field, or was it something else?
I had a Christian conversion experience late in life.
Like, you want to claim that Donald Trump hates black people? Why are you saying that? Oh, because this rapper said it. Well, did you know that Donald Trump has literally brought about the lowest black unemployment rate in our nation's history, and that wages are rising in the black community like never before? And then they're like, oh, no, I didn't know that. And I'm like, well, now you know.
Some people respond when you tell them that, they will say, well, actually, Obama started it.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, though, is they blame Trump for everything. So it's like, how do you blame someone for everything but give them credit for nothing?
It's a movement, but it's about people. Be the People is about we the people joining forces to reclaim and reshape the best of our nation's time-treasured traditions. Each week, we offer insightful interviews with movers and shakers from all different spheres of life. And now, please welcome Dr. Carol Swain.
My guest today is C.J. Pearson, a teenager who is young, black, and unapologetically Republican. C.J. is currently a high school junior, and he has become prominent online with more than 350,000 likes on Facebook, 100,000 followers on Twitter, and over 100 million views on social media. CJ is also the executive director of Young Georgians in Government and Teens for Trump. He lives with his parents in Augusta, Georgia. CJ, it's a great pleasure to welcome you to the show.
Hey, Dr. Swain, thanks for having me.
Now, I understand you were raised in a Democratic household, and you became interested in politics in the second grade.
Yeah, so, I did. So it all started out, you know, in the second grade, and that was the Barack Obama-John McCain election. And our second grade teacher gave us an assignment, and what she wanted us to do is she wanted to have a mock election that week. And she wanted us to do what every other American at the time was doing, research the candidates, figure out who we aligned with, and then cast our vote. And so I remember watching the debates, watching, you know, all of the commentary surrounding the election, and just honestly just kind of becoming really, really enthralled with what was happening. It felt like what was going on was a really important moment in the country, and I realized that even when I was in second grade. And so I would say that's one of the first times that I really got hooked. I remember casting my ballot for John McCain in that election, not necessarily because I knew I was a conservative then or a Republican, but because, you know, my grandfather, he had served in the military for 20 years, and I admired John McCain's story of sacrifice that he had made in his career, you know, being a prisoner of war. You know, over time, you know, I still remained intrigued by politics, and I wanted to continue to learn more and more about our system of government. Began reading things like the Federalist Papers, reading more about the Republican platform, reading even the Democratic platform, and just sort of figuring out, you know, this sort of just makes a lot of sense to me over one side or the other. And so initially, you know, I saw a lot of my views shaping up to be conservative, you know, views like believing in fiscal conservatism. You know, I believe in that because almost every week or, you know, month, you know, my parents sit around the dinner table and they figure out what money we're going to spend and how we're going to spend it. And if we don't have enough money to afford a particular thing, well, we don't spend it because that's just the way it is. And then the idea that our government doesn't seem capable of doing the same thing, which has resulted in us being more in more than $20+ trillion in debt is absolutely, you know, asinine to me. And so I definitely think a biggest thing that kind of lured me to conservatism was just common sense, you know, and a strong admiration for the Constitution, the intent of our founding fathers as well.
Well, this podcast, we like common sense. It's my trademark.
Yeah. That's a big thing.
Yeah, it is. It's
common, far too uncommon.
There's a big shortage of common sense in this nation.
I agree. And, you know, you see that all throughout Washington, D.C. You know, people will do things and you're just like, why do they think that's okay? You know, these solutions that they're putting forth are completely and totally out of touch, you know, with the American people. You know, just this past week you saw in New York a Democratic socialist essentially become elected to Congress. She lives in a solidly blue district. She's not going to lose the general election. And she ran on Democratic socialism.
I saw that.
Yeah. And I tell people all the time, you know, you can talk to me about socialism when you're not complaining about capitalism on your iPhone and you've actually been to Venezuela, okay, where people are starving and cannot find a meal to eat and are literally in famine because of their socialist economic system. Then you can lecture me about the glory of socialism. But until then, you know, I don't really think I'm in the mood to hear too much of your socialist diatribes.
Now, CJ, what was the first serious book you read after you prepared for that second grade debate?
Yeah, I would say the first political book that I read when I was just learning more about conservatism and learning more just sort of about conservative ideology as a whole, I read America by Dinesh D'Souza. That was one of my first books. Ben Carson, I read his One Nation book. I've read books like 1984 by George Orwell, which really does warn us a lot about authoritarianism and all socialism, too, and whatnot. And it really, you know, it's so interesting to see sort of the intellectual arguments that really have erected themselves surrounding conservatism, because you just really do realize that a lot of things that conservatives believe aren't far-fetched, and the facts are really truly on our side, and they are, you know, as you said, they're just common sense.
Now, have you read Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals?
I've heard a lot about it, but I have not gotten a chance to. No.
You have to read it. You could not understand the political left unless you read the book, and it's not very long, and it really outlines the entire strategy that was used to pretty much take over our institutions. And Saul Alinsky really, as you know, he was the community organizer that Barack Obama studied, but he really pushed infiltration, deception, and manipulation. That's how the political left was able to get inside of our institutions and take them over.
Yeah. Yeah, and you see that to this day, you know, in almost every institution we see, from Hollywood to culture to the media to academia, you know, liberals have literally sought to completely and totally control any and all institution that we have in this country. And I definitely think it's up to conservatives to fight this at every turn, to ensure that liberals know that we will not go down without a fight, because we see it every single day, especially through culture and the media. You know, you have people who claim to be objective and be fair, but are out here just pushing the liberal narrative at every turn. You know, this is the sort of thing that, you know, has a lot of Americans, I think, disillusioned with so many institutions and weary of them, because they realize the nefarious motives that a lot of them have now because of those Alinsky-like tactics that you were just mentioning.
Yeah, I think that if you actually delve into some of the literature of the political left, it will make you even more powerful than you are right now as a force to be reckoned with. And so you have to promise me that before you go to college, that you're going to read a list of books that I'm going to send you.
Yeah, will do. Will do. Definitely. I love reading. So definitely shoot me that list.
And tell me about your family. How have they reacted to your conservatism?
Yeah, so it's interesting. It definitely makes for some interesting dinner time conversation, no doubt. You know, I think it's been really good to have their support in general of me being involved politically, even though we don't see eye to eye on most political issues. It certainly has been heartening to have their support, especially in a time where politics is one of the most divisive things that we're grappling with as a country. You know, I would say that I benefit from having Democratic parents. And the reason I would say that is because I understand their arguments. I understand what they're built upon. And I understand their pitfalls and all of that. And I realize that a lot of liberal arguments aren't really based on fact. That's not the foundation they're built upon. They're built upon emotion. That's all it is, easily manipulated emotions. And so, you know, sometimes when I'm going back and forth with my parents or other family members, it's so intriguing because I'm like, guys, look at this statistic. Like, you want to claim that Donald Trump hates black people? Why are you saying that? Oh, because this rapper said it. Well, did you know that Donald Trump has literally brought about the lowest black unemployment rate in our nation's history and that wages are rising in the black community like never before? And then they're like, oh, no, I didn't know that. And I'm like, well, now you know.
Some people respond when you tell them that, they will say, well, actually, Obama started it.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, though, is they blame Trump for everything. So it's like, how do you blame someone for everything but give them credit for nothing?
I know. You're right. You're right. Do you have any siblings, and how old are your parents?
Yeah, so I'm the only child, and my parents are in their 30s.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Boy, they produced a handful.
Yeah, yeah.
What did they do for a living?
Yeah, so my mom, she's a stay-at-home mom, and my daddy's an engineer.
Okay, all right. Well, that is interesting. I look forward to meeting your parents.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, next time you're in Augusta, I'd love to see you. And I'll probably, like I told you, I'm definitely probably going to be coming up to Nashville soon to tour Vanderbilt. And, you know, you don't work there anymore, but they may have a new conservative on their hands pretty soon.
Well, I mean, we need you there. We need you in Nashville, but any university would, I mean, it would be great to have you on the campus because you would certainly cause the faculty as well as the students to think. And thinking is something that nowadays there's so many people that they just memorize the answer to every politically correct issue in the world and they just regurgitate. So you can force people to think, and that would be a valuable contribution to any institution, including the Ivy League.
Yeah. Definitely. And the point you just hit on is so important, is that we live in a time right now where people have been conditioned not to think. Not to think for themselves, not to think freely, and sometimes not even to think at all. And that's the biggest reason that you have so many people who blindly follow the leftist ideology and their victimhood narrative. Because they're not thinking for themselves because they've been conditioned by society not to think. Our institutions have been basically conditioning people to leave, to basically teach them that thinking should be left to the institutions themselves. Don't think because the media will think for you. And so that's the biggest thing that's so important, is that we have people thinking for themselves, constantly confronting new ideas, new solutions, new policies, and just going out of their comfort zone. The biggest thing that I always tell people when they're, you know, constantly talking about microaggressions and triggers is that there's no safe spaces in the real world. And the fact of the matter is that is an amazing thing because you interact with so many new experiences and new ideas. And that kind of goes back to, you know, me growing up in a Democratic household, is that every single time, even if I disagree with my parents, I'm forced to think about what they're saying. Why do they support policy? Why do they believe in these, you know, since this policy agenda, you know? And that makes me think, and that makes me think. And sometimes makes me believe what I believe a little bit more, and sometimes makes me think, okay, I've never thought about that issue that way. And so I think that is truly so important, is that we become a nation of thinkers again and not just groupthink. You know, groupthink is not thinking at all, to be quite frank.
You're right. And do you attend a public or private school?
I go to a public school.
And what have your experiences been with your teachers and classmates? How have they reacted to your activism?
Yeah, so it's interesting. You know, I actually live in a fairly conservative county, so a lot of my friends, you know, sort of support me politically and whatnot. But what's interesting, though, is that a lot of my friends didn't really care about politics before Trump. Trump really got a lot of young people involved, got a lot of young people paying attention. And so, you know, the reception that I've gotten has been, you know, pretty interesting. A lot of people saying, what's Trump going to do next? What is he doing? What is he thinking about this? And, you know, it's like, and I'm kind of like their Wikipedia for everything politics, so it's funny. But, you know, as far as teachers go, you know, sometimes you have a few debates. I, you know, like to think that I can hold my own. You know, the same thing there, you know, I love kind of having my beliefs challenged because it lets me defend them. It makes me hone the best arguments that I can to defend those beliefs that I hold. And, you know, I took AP Gov this past year, and there were definitely no shortage of liberal students in the classroom. And so I think I love the back and forth discussion, because I think it made all of us think a little bit more openly, which I think, like I said, is really the goal. Like, get people thinking, get people questioning themselves and questioning, you know, their preconceived notions about the world. And I think that's progress, because that's something that we just don't see anymore.
Have you already thought about, I know you've thought about this, but have you decided what you would like to pursue as a career choice?
You know, I've thought about a few things. You know, either, I'm actually interested in academia, business, and maybe eventually, like, I've thought about law. You know, this funny thing about law is that I, ever since I was, like, a little boy, I've been watching Law & Order SVU. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's an amazing show. You should definitely see it. And so, you know, ever since then, I've kind of had this big attraction to the law. But kind of as I've grown older, you know, I've really had an interest in kind of tackling really complex ideas and notions, and sort of tackling big, complicated issues and problems, you know, that affect government and sort of the people's way of thinking about government, interactions with government. And so I've sort of kind of gotten interested in academia a little bit more than I was before. So I don't know. You know, I'm definitely excited to see the plan that God has for me.
I would love to see you go into academia. I think you would be great at it, and you would have a, you know, a choice of possibilities as to where you could teach, whether it's at the, whether it's in a law school or just at a regular university in one of the other fields. But it is a critical shortage of conservative professors, and I would love to see more young people like you go into academia. A lot of people are discouraged because they feel like they couldn't make it through the programs, that there are too many liberals, but that's not actually true. There are options. There are places where you can go as a conservative and be successful.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing. I'm always down for a challenge. You know, I love a challenge. And so I think academia really does give you that challenge. It makes you think in ways that you never really had to think before. And, that's really, I think, the biggest merit that it would have. And also, you know, conservatives like to complain a lot about the bias that we see in academia. But like you just said, you know, a lot of conservatives just decide not to pursue it because they don't want to be surrounded by liberals. Well, the fact of the matter is we're never going to equal the playing field if we just run away from a fight, you know? Like, we have to tackle the issue if we want to fix the issue. And so I definitely think the best way to overhaul the system or reform the system and to beat back the control that liberals have on our academic institutions is to go into academia, to pay it forward, to, you know, just basically encourage our nation's young people to be free thinkers and to just expose them to beliefs that they may just have never been exposed to throughout their college experience.
Well, everyone's not wired like you, and so a lot of young people who may have been raised in conservative families, when they go to the universities, they find themselves isolated, or they feel like they're isolated. Some of them are converted to secularism. They lose their faith. And so I really encourage people to find the strategy that's best for them. It's not everyone who's to be out front. Not everyone is wired to be out front. And so there is a place for someone that kind of keeps their mouth quiet at times, but very silently. They're still activists in how they write and how they think, but they don't always confront everything head on. But as you know, you are the person that, you know, you like to stand, you like to fight, you can argue, you're wired to confront it head on.
Yeah, and there's room for everyone, you know, like from the quieter types whose impact is most seen in the words that they write, the opinions they may write, you know, from a judicial bench or maybe, you know, submitting it to an academic journal. You know, those really, those small things move the dial in so many ways, and they expose people to alternate views we're just not seeing. You know, from academics. And, you know, and I think that is a really big deal. You know, not all the time are the loudest voices the most impactful. Sometimes it's the people that just sit and listen and just are just geniuses, you know, that really move the dial in a direction that it needs to be moved to. And so, yeah, I think there's room for all types of conservatives to really start barnstorming these institutions that liberals have long had their hands gripped around in a way that they feel they can be of most help. And I definitely think that it's going to be something that's really interesting. You know, what I would give my advice to every conservative student across the country, and I get messages like this all the time, you know, how are you conservative and also a student? Like, what is that like? How do I survive, you know, doing that? I'm like, hey, never lose your sense of purpose. Never lose sight of why you believe the things that you believe. It's attached to your principles, your value system. But also realize that you're not alone. There are millions of people across this country who believe similar things to what you do. And so it's like, never forget that. You may not be surrounded by tons of people who agree with what you believe now, but in the real world, there's going to be tons of people who back you up at every turn. And so I always tell people, at the end of the day, don't play to the crowd because you want to be true to yourself. You know, that will leave you the most satisfied being true to yourself.
Okay, now CJ, we need to take a break, and when we return from the break, I want you to continue with your advice that you have for other teens.
For sure.
Are you wondering what we can do about immigration? Then get your copy of my newly released book, Debating Immigration, the second edition, available at Amazon, Cambridge University Press, and all major booksellers.
The Out Loud Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
We're back with CJ Pearson. CJ, before I took the break, you were talking about advice that you have for teens. I would imagine that you encounter a lot of young people who would like to become a CJ Pearson, and some older folks too.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, you know, it's always so interesting to me to hear people's stories, their unique experiences, especially from other young people, you know, in the classroom, on their college campuses, and so forth and so on. And a lot of these younger people are asking me, CJ, I'm the only conservative in the room. I'm the lone conservative, and there aren't too many people who agree with me. How do I ensure that I keep my beliefs, you know, strong? How do I ensure that I'm not only, you know, advocating for them, but doing so in a way that can maybe change the minds of other people in the room? And what I always tell them is that conservatives have one benefit, and our biggest benefit is that the truth is on our side. You know, when you look at the things that we believe in, they are blatant common sense, and there are multiple studies upon studies to suggest that the things that we believe are just that, common sense. And so I always tell people, always believe in yourself, and make sure that you know why you believe what you believe. It's one thing to say, I support the Second Amendment. Why do you support the Second Amendment? It's one thing to believe in fiscal conservatism. Why do you believe in fiscal conservatism? Because when you start asking yourself why, you start thinking about your values, your principles, and you start thinking about how you acquired those values and those principles. And you probably acquire those values and principles from meaningful life experiences that you don't want to discard. And that does nothing more than harden your belief in the very principles and policies and political stances that you take. Because you begin to cherish those things and those values and principles that got you to where you are. And so I always tell them, don't forget why you believe this thing in the first place. And always know why. Always know why.
Now, CJ, you sound like a motivational speaker. Have you always been this way? And as a small child, before you got into politics, were you a bit different from the beginning?
Yeah, my mom always told me I was talkative, if you can't tell, and I still am, no doubt. You know, it's so funny. When I was in school, the biggest complaint, it wouldn't be like I was a bad kid or I was disrespectful or anything. It would just be I talked too much in school. And so, you know, it was always, you know, interesting to hear those stories. But No, I think I've always been sort of different. I've always had different interests. Even when I was younger and I wasn't researching politics and reading the Federalist Papers, I was always looking up something. You know, I wanted to know more. I wanted to learn more about the world around us and sort of figure out how things really came to be. And so I think I've always been different and I've always embraced that. And, I think it's been an interesting journey, you know, to just really open my eyes to the world around me and never stop wanting to learn more about it.
Can you share with our listeners something about your faith life?
Yeah, so I'm a big Christian. You know, I go to church often. I'm a Baptist. And the biggest thing that sort of guides my political beliefs as well, and kind of goes back to the point I just made about why. You know, why do I believe in things like fiscal conservatism? Well, the Bible speaks about that. You know, why do I believe in the things about the intrinsic value in life, you know, that a fetus has? Well, the Bible talks about that, and that's sort of why I believe those things. And so, you know, the person that I've always looked to for guidance on some of these really big moral issues that we confront as a society has been God. And, you know, being in politics, it's a rough and tumble sport. And so sometimes you only feel like the only ally you have is God. So it's really important to have a close connection.
Absolutely. And so,
it's definitely been something that I'm proud of and that I'm always trying to make stronger every single day, because I definitely believe, like I said, you know, politics is rough and tumble. And sometimes you need someone to look to who's a lot more perfect than you are. And there's no one more perfect than the God we serve.
Okay, we're going to take another break. And then when we return, I'm going to ask you about your favorite book or any kind of quote you'd like to share with our listeners. Are you wondering what we can do about immigration? Then get your copy of my newly released book, Debating Immigration, the second edition, available at Amazon, Cambridge University Press, and all major booksellers. I'm back with CJ Pearson, and CJ was about to tell us about his favorite book or quote or anything that he thinks would help our listeners.
For sure. You know, my favorite book that I'm reading right now is called 12 Rules for Life. It's by Jordan Peterson. And what he really talks about in that book is about the fine line between order and chaos in life, you know, and walking the middle of it, kind of the yin and the yang, right? Like the yin was order and then the yang was chaos. And then you walk that fine line and that's the perfect, balance between the two. And the things he talks about, you know, are really profound in a lot of ways. It's really impacted my life, for the better, thinking about just personal things that, you know, really trace back to my personal values and principles, but also just how to lead a better life for yourself and to improve your productivity, to improve your outlook on life, and just to improve your future ambitions. And so I would recommend that book to almost anyone. It's well written. Great. Jordan Peterson is incredibly brilliant. Definitely a great book to read.
Now, when are you going to write a book about your life?
Maybe soon. You know, I've actually been weighing that, pretty heavily. A big thing that I'm really passionate about is Generation Z, which, as you probably know, is a generation that follows millennials. And, you know, a lot of people would think that, you know, Generation Z, because we're all young and stuff, that we're just liberal, right? But the research actually suggests that we're one of the most conservative generations since World War II.
I've seen that research, yes.
Yeah, and so I often tell people, you know, Donald Trump's generation will start the process of making America great again, but it'll be my generation that keeps America great. And so I think what I really want to do is just write about the fact that Generation Z isn't the liberal, snowflakes that millennials were or are currently, maybe, but we are a different breed, and we believe in things like limited government and free enterprise. We love the free market and so forth and so on. And David Hogg and all those kids in Parkland who are always screaming and shouting out gun control, they're not representative of our generation. We have far more, you know, right-leaning beliefs than the media would like to display, but there's more like me. There's more like me. You know, I people tell me that all the time. They're like, you know, CJ, I wish there were more like you. There are tons more like me. They're just not as loud as me or as outspoken as me. But I can assure you from the messages I get every single day from kids across this country, I think America's going to be in good hands.
CJ, I'm so encouraged by talking with you and just knowing that there's a young person out there in America who cares and who's working on behalf of Judeo-Christian values and principles.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I really appreciate your support. I know I've read a lot about you and your path to where you are, which I really admire. You know, number one, you're a black conservative, which is never easy. Trust me, I know. And then two, you were an academic. And like we kind of talked about over the course of the show, it just isn't always easy when you're someone who holds the conservative view. And so I would definitely say that that's something that I really admire. And it was a pleasure joining you.
Can you tell our listeners how they can learn more about you and your vision?
Yeah, for sure. All of your listeners can visit my website at cjpearson.org. You can follow me on Twitter at @thecjpearson. You can also check out my Facebook page. Just type CJ Pearson and it should pop up.
Thank you so much.